This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Alaska Supreme Court justices expressed skepticism over the state's broad power to regulate the speech of Alaska Native Corporation shareholders. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the justices heard the ACLU's challenge over the state sanctioning a no man over a letter to the editor he'd published in his local newspaper.
The letter to the editor penned in 2017 didn't say who shareholders should vote for. Rather, it addressed how they should vote. But the state stepped in anyway, arguing that Austin Amasuk should have first registered his statement with financial regulators.
Alleged misstatements are not at issue here. Mr. Amasuk was fined and is in front of this court because he failed to send the letter to the division on the same day that he sent it to the newspaper and because he failed to fill out the disclosure form.
That's Amasuk's lawyer, Susan Olansky, in front of the state Supreme Court on Wednesday. First, some background. Alaska Native corporations were created by an act of Congress nearly 50 years ago as part of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. But the federal government left it up to the state to regulate them. That includes the board of director elections for the Sitnasauk Native Corporation in Nome. It falls to the Division of Banking and Securities. The justices heard from Assistant Attorney General Robert Schmidt that Native corporations are keeping regulators busy.
Of all the division's enforcement areas, banks, financial institutions, securities, the division spends more time on ANCSA solicitation enforcement than any other program area.
The case was brought by the American Civil Liberties Union to test the limits of the state's power to regulate shareholder speech. Orlansky argued the division's requirement for disclosure filings in advance of any statement that could sway elections is much too broad.
And that gets the division into regulating all sorts of political speech, dissident speech, what's wrong with this corporation, as well as favorable speech.
The justices seized on this point. Justice Daniel Winfrey quizzed Schmidt. He posed a hypothetical question.
If you wrote nothing other than, it's time for everybody to come to the shareholder meeting instead of voting by proxy, don't execute proxies, come to the meeting and vote, that's a violation of law.
Yes, Your Honor.
The attorney clarified that it would trigger the need for the shareholder to first file with the state.
If you don't register, it's a violation of law.
Yes.
Isn't that a little much?
At one point, Chief Justice Joe Bolger turned it around. He says state regulations over corporate speech also ensures Native corporations don't put out false information and dupe shareholders.
If we do as you say, aren't we opening a loophole that will be a loophole not only for the weak but also for the mighty?
Well, I think that maybe the answer goes...
Orlansky told Bolger the state could model its rules after the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission, which regulates publicly traded corporations. The SEC has loosened restrictions on the speech of shareholders who are not running for office, but it kept the regulations in place for the corporation itself.
And so that, I think, is part of the answer, is that this may not necessarily need to be a scheme that is even-handed.
The justices said a written decision would be forthcoming. They didn't indicate when. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
As climate change hits coastal communities in Alaska, many tribes are being forced to consider moving from their ancestral lands. But it's not a uniquely Alaska challenge. Last week, the native village of Kivalina joined four Louisiana tribes in a formal complaint to the United Nations. They allege the United States has not done enough to protect the human rights of villagers as erosion creeps into their communities. For Alaska's Energy Desk, Wesley Early has more.
Chief Sherelle Parfait-Dardar is the head of the Grand Cayu Dulac Band of Biloxi Chittimacha Choctaw Tribe in coastal Louisiana. She's advocated for years to get officials to recognize the problems plaguing her community.
Our food source is declining. Our health is declining. You know, so we have been fighting for many, many years, you know, trying to adapt to all of these changes, trying to get officials to recognize what's been going on.
Thousands of miles away in the northwest Arctic village of Kivalina, tribal administrator Millie Holly tells a similar story about her home.
Our little home is diminishing and losing ground every year.
Holly says that the village has had to adapt to changes, including less access to marine mammals for subsistence.
A lot of the food that I grew up eating, we don't harvest anymore, and I'm eating mainly what we do get, and that's caribou and fish, and not much more than the store-bought food.
Due to coastal erosion, Kivalina has had to move its clinic, its school, and some homes to stop them from being washed into the ocean.
When other parts of the island erodes, cause the home to almost crack in half.
These cross-continental concerns are summarized in a formal United Nations complaint filed by Kivalina and four Louisiana tribes last week. The complaint alleges that the federal government has, quote, failed to protect the human rights of tribal nations in Louisiana and Alaska who are being forcibly displaced from their ancestral lands, end quote. Parfait Dardar with the Grand Cayou du Lac says she's tried in the past to get help from the federal government, but her concerns went unanswered.
Every single time I asked, it's the same response. Well, you know, we can't do that. The Corps would never do it, or we don't have the funding for that. Or it's always an excuse.
The tribes hope that investigators with the UN will light a fire under state and federal agencies to do something. Parfait Dardar says that she's hopeful that the UN will listen because it's not just North America that is struggling with climate change.
I know that the United Nations is getting many, many complaints from all over the world that are dealing with a lot of the same similar issues that we have been dealing with.
While Parfait Dardar and Holly maintain a strong sense of optimism, it's hard to tell how seriously the federal government will take United Nations recommendations. The Trump administration has not been cooperating with human rights investigators since 2018, and President Trump has said that his perceived political bias of the United Nations is what's getting in the way. Holly in Kivalina says that if something isn't done to help her community, her tribe and tribes across Alaska will lose their traditional way of life.
We have children and grandchildren that we're looking out for. We want to make sure that they have safe ground, that they are able to build homes and able to live in this area where I grew up, where they grew up.
As they wait for a response, Holly says the village is moving forward on relocation projects, including a short bridge that is part of their evacuation road. Holly says it's set to be completed in October, but the changing landscape means that deadline is still up in the air. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Wesley Early in Kotzebue.
The Federal Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, is looking for local help managing its Alaska lands. The BLM is specifically looking for rural Alaskans willing to sit on their Resource Advisory Council. Melinda Bolton, the BLM's Public Affairs Director, says the Bureau specifically needs better representation from rural Alaskans because they are the ones who live near BLM lands.
You know, this is a really great opportunity for them to have a direct influence and a direct impact on the way we manage lands in their backyard, and they can work 2 to 3 times a year with our state director to make recommendations right to him.
Residents of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta are no strangers to the role of advisory councils. Many sit on groups advising both the federal and state governments on managing wildlife and fisheries. Bolton says being on some other council does not prevent a person from being considered for the BLM's advisory group.
It actually, in my opinion, makes you an even better candidate for being part of this council because you understand some of the federal advisory committee laws, and you understand how they already work. You understand that building consensus is really important. I really hope that some of those people hear this today.
The BLM Resource Advisory Council meets 3 times a year. People can nominate themselves or someone else. For more information on how to apply, contact Melinda Bolton at mbolton@blm.gov. The BLM Alaska Resource Advisory Council has 4 vacancies, and Bolton says the plan is to put forward 8 candidates for consideration by the White House. Lastly, the Donlin Gold Invitational Basketball Tournament gets started today in Bethel and runs through Saturday. KYUK will broadcast several games starting at 3:30 p.m. this afternoon when Antioch faces off against Galena. Then at 5 p.m. this afternoon, you can listen as the Antioch boys take the court against Galena. Other teams competing in the tournament include Scammon Bay, Reddington, and Bethel Regional High School. The Donlin Gold Invitational Basketball Tournament ends Saturday evening with the games for first place for both the boys and girls team. KYUK plans to air all the tournament playoffs starting at 10 a.m. Saturday morning. This is KYUK News. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Thank you for listening. Please email your comments and news tips to news@kyuk.org. And stay tuned for News Yuktun coming up.